And good afternoon, everyone. It is our March edition of PMC Live. I'm your host, Angela Denning. PMC Live happens the first Thursday of every month, and that's when KFSK is able to check in with leadership at the Petersburg Medical Center on the air and see what's happening over there. Today, I'm joined in the studio by nurse manager Jennifer Briner, CEO Phil Hofstetter, and we also have Kelly Zweifel joining us on the telephone. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
Kelly, you are the manager of the Joy Janssen Clinic, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn everybody's mics on. So today we're going to be talking about the effects that COVID has had on PMC's staffing and supplies, kind of where the pandemic's at right now. And we're also going to be hearing about some administrative things, a presentation with search that's going to be happening. So before we jump into COVID, can we get an administrative report?
Sure. Yeah, happy to. At our last board meeting, our last couple of board meetings, our board invited search to provide a presentation. This is a conversation that started last summer, where at the joint meeting with the assembly and the PMC, we put a resolution together for moving forward with just the concept and of a new facility. And that sort of sparked a lot of interest in other alternatives because cost was a factor, and search certainly was in that conversation. And so the community has prompted or requested a conversation, or at least a presentation, for search to see what is able to be provided and what scenarios that could be under. And the board provided that as a presentation, and that is occurring on March 24th.
So search people will be here in town.
Yeah, my understanding is search leadership will be here to present. You know, we wanted to do it under the auspices of a board meeting so that we have some structure. And it's really the function of the board to provide opportunity for questions to search in a formal fashion, or more of a board meeting fashion. And so it is open. It is an open meeting. So obviously it's open to the public. We're going to provide. We're going to move it to the assembly chambers simply because there might be some more infrastructure there and more space. We do want to make sure that if people are going to show up, we'd want to know about it. We'll get some information out there, and we'll want them to have some masking and protocols. Obviously, we're still dealing with some COVID situation. And then we'll also have it on Zoom, and so it's available online as well. So there'll be multiple opportunities to be able to listen in and hear the conversation and presentation.
And I think KFSK is... hopefully
I was going to ask, that'd be great. Yes.
Well, we just talked about it this morning at a staff meeting, and if it's in the assembly chambers, there's a real good audio system set up there. So we're going to try to broadcast that meeting. So it sounds like the board will be presenting questions to search. Is that something where the public could funnel questions in through the board, or if the public shows up, do you think?
Yeah, so there's, you know, the nice thing about a board meeting is that there is visitor comments. But, you know, we did have internally we had some conversation and dialogue about the best way to have this conversation. And I had a conversation yesterday with a community member. And I think it's important to sort of reframe, like, you know, what are we asking? What's the purpose of the meeting? You know, what's occurring? And it was also a reminder, as not everyone is really on the same page or understanding of where everyone else is. You know, it seems like it's like, hey, what is going on? You know, what does this mean? And so to backtrack just a little bit, I mean, last year, you know, since I came in a few years ago, three, four years ago, this is before COVID, you know, the hospital we have an aging facility. So, you know, how are we going to replace the building? What is the status of the current structure? And what are the next steps? And really the idea and concept is to look at the existing structure, which we did through the form of a master plan. And that document is public, and it's also assessed the facility, the existing work that's been done since 2015, as far as like a feasibility, the structural analysis, the aging plant, and then what are sort of the recommendations from that? And from those recommendations, really the idea is that you know, if we want to continue providing healthcare services in the community, we need a new building. You know, we don't need a new hospital, meaning we're very pleased with what's operating in the facility, but we need a new building and a new structure. And how are we going to do that? And I think that's where a lot of the sort of confusion comes across on how it's going to be paid for and questions that can't be answered right away. So it has to be a very specific step process. You know, what is the space requirements? You know, where can we potentially put a new facility? A lot of those questions were answered in the master plan, but they're not said and done. And so there's a number of steps that we have to get to in order to make sure that we are making the right decisions in that process. And, you know, that's where I think it's important to make sure that we don't get ahead of ourselves on things and make sure we're asking the right questions and making sure that if we're having a presentation with Search, that we're looking at this looking at this from the standpoint of what kind of services are provided in the community, you know, what is Search offering and what can we do to work together. And if we can't, you know, if there's going to be a decision where an organization wants to just come in and take over, what does that mean for the community at large as far as healthcare services? And those are big questions. And those are things that require ongoing conversations and ongoing dialogue.
Okay. So for PMC, you're saying it's a very long years long process of getting a new facility. And there's been, you know, you have some things on paper of what things might cost, where it might be located, some options. Where is the timeline now? Where are you at in the timeline? Are you going after funding for certain things or?
Right. So, I mean, I think really, you know, the question for me is with regards to Search as far as the next step is, you know, what role do they want to play and what role can we really collaborate with them as an organization? And, you know, if we're not able to work with Search, if we want to continue going forward as PMC as a community hospital, which is really, I think, you know, something that I'm very supportive of, is what are sort of the goals where we want to be able to do that? Like, what's the site selection? What's the location? What is the final assessment of space programming? What is the cost of preparing the site? You know, that next phase. I mean, that's really where we want to be able to look and evaluate funding. And we were fortunate enough to have Senator Murkowski put in some funding for that to be able to get to that site preparation stage. And really is building up I would say more of a baseline or a pyramid structure of getting these steps closer to the point of a full building. Because it's really not the building that we want. It's what's inside of it that we want to care about. I mean, that's the staffing, the resources, you know, and that could dovetail into this next step where, you know, when we had COVID, you know, we had a lot of difficulties with stress and turnover and staffing. And really the value of our staff to me is so visible, you know, is so much greater than now because of going through COVID. I want to hold on to that as much as possible. And you see the value of that into the community. We don't want to impose more organizational disruption, organizational change as much as possible because the staff is so valuable to this community.
Do you see, a future where when you talk about collaborating or partnering or some future with Search, is there a possibility of doing that with a new hospital? Can you see them say, you know, somehow they have funds for a structure facility or something and you say, well, we still want to have our hospital in place within those walls?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the, you know, the $20,000 question is, can we work together collaboratively where we are able to operate independently and provide community and healthcare to the community, and having the ability of working in some structure or some format where we're complement each other. Absolutely, that is definitely one of the questions we'll want to ask at the March 24th meeting.
And then, staffing. If what I imagine is some if it was something like that, I would think there would be some outsourced, when I say outsourced, could be to Juno or, but some maybe loss of staff with going with search, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, here.
Because like finances, let's say finance department or other things that might have some, you know, other location.
Here are the questions that I would want to know and ask as a community member. Number one, any disruption to an organization, you know, if COVID is a disruption to an organization, we're going to have turnover. If we have another disruption to an organization, we will have potential for a loss of turnover. I don't see an organizational takeover concept being, you know, retaining staff. I mean, that's part of the problem for me. You know, that's why it's important to look at it a collaborative way. Like, we just went through this crazy experience in the last couple of years. We saw how valuable staff are. We saw how valuable we want a local workforce is. We saw how we can take care of people right away and provide services immediately to help in this public health crisis. You know, how do we retain that? It's so hard to build staff up and to create a local workforce, but it's so easy to tear it down. So we want to make sure that we retain as much as possible what's inside that building and the healthcare services that we have at pretty much at all costs, in my opinion. And so that could, you know, that's our stance. I mean, that's what I would push for. That's what our board certainly agrees with that. And we hope the community agrees with that. I mean, that's really sort of an educational process to make sure that the community sees that and asks the right questions to make sure that we are, you know, we're charged with evaluating and delivering healthcare services locally. And, you know, the question is search, you know, looking at it as a whole geographic region and delivering service geographically, and where does Petersburg fall in that, you know, in those? And does that mean a loss of services? Does that mean scaling things and pulling jobs up centrally? You know, those are the questions to ask.
How many positions, how many local jobs does PMC have now? I remember it was over 100 last time I actually got the figure, but do you know?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a moving target because we had struggled with some turnover and we enhanced services and we lost some people. So probably right around 125 to 130 full-time staff.
Wow. Okay. So what, certainly one of the biggest employers in town, seasonally, quite possibly the biggest. Besides, you know, of course, OBI in the summer has quite a few workers, but year round.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, our budget for salaries and wages is right around $12 million. So that equates to salaries and wages. So 95, 96 at a, you know, percent of the staff live here, have families here. So that amount goes into the families and into the community directly. That means we're not getting contractors coming in and, you know, taking those services and then leaving, and that, you know, from a financial standpoint, that stays within the community. So that's certainly an aspect that we want to make sure that we're looking at. And we here have these, you know, we have Jennifer and Kelly here to talk about that local workforce growth and, you know, some of the things that they've invested many, many years in building. I mean, Jennifer certainly has invested many years in building in a CNA program and the RN cohort. And making sure we retain those things. Those are to me, a building's a building. But, and I, you know, I've gone through this with, you know, previously where I worked before. And, you know, the most valuable thing is what's inside the building, the services that are provided to the community.
Yeah. So kind of segueing into staffing at the clinic, and then also just Jennifer, you oversee 25 nurses at the hospital. How has things changed because of COVID and the pandemic the last couple of years with staffing for you, Jennifer?
I think primarily with, we've really noticed with CNA staffing has really suffered. It's a hard job. You know, that first year of the pandemic, our CNAs made incredible sacrifices personally by, you know, just doing everything in their power to stay safe, not getting together with friends and family. You know, and so that's a lot for people, and it was such a long haul. So we've definitely seen a decrease in the number of CNAs. We're really pleased. We have some just incredible CNAs that make our whole department run. and provide those basic cares to our residents and then our patients. And so, you know, we continue to offer CNA classes. We're trying really hard to work on retention, you know. And then sometimes we've lost CNAs just because they grow. Like we lost, you know, 4 CNAs that became nurses last spring. So it's always kind of a, you know, it's always an area that we really love to get great people in and get them trained. There's a CNA program that we have kind of a rolling start. We can do it every few months. And it's a great, great way for people to know if the medicine field is something that they're interested in. Great segue into nursing, you know, therapies, all those things. And so we can do that. We hire people without experience and train them, pay them for their training, and then have them come to work for us. So, yeah, it's an invaluable source. Our nurses, you know, our nursing turnover is quite low, actually. We're really fortunate. All of our nurses, the nurses that actually live in town, who are our permanent employees, are like they have families and they have roots and they, you know, are part of the community. We do have several open positions that are travelers that kind of do rotate through. And that sometimes can be great, and it can bring some issues as well. So we're pleased. We're going to be starting up the another cohort of nursing students through UAA this fall. So we know of at least several applicants that are going to be really great additions to that program. So we're excited about that. And we just, you know, we're feeling like we're not out of the woods with COVID yet, but we are working on really focusing on the future and you know, growing our staff, just our experiences. And we learned a lot the last few years. But now we're kind of back into like, let's get into education and like focus on these kind of non-COVID things so we can really keep moving forward and improving the quality and the experience for all of our patients and residents.
Now that nursing program you're talking about, that's local, where local people can become nurses mm-hmm. here in Petersburg without going somewhere else. It sounds like, so it's a stepping program where you can go entry level, you don't need experience, CNA. And then the nursing program is kind of tiered two, right? You can become an RN, but there's also the like AA degree.
Yeah.
Right?
So the University of Alaska outreach program that we are able to offer is an associate's degree. And then a lot of then the nurses will go back and do their online Bachelor of Science in Nursing program. So I've just been super impressed with all the nurses who, you know, don't need to do the extra education to keep their job, or it's not even really financially rewarded so much, but they just have a thirst for learning and improving. And it's just a really incredible group of people that are working as nurses in our facility.
So start to finish with the, let's say you don't have any experience, I think I want to become a nurse. Mm-hmm. Is that a 2-3 year program for the...
Two years.
2 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how much do nurses get paid, you know, if they do go through the program, yeah, and they get a degree, what's the starting for a salary for them?
The starting wage is somewhere in the, I think it's in like the $37 an hour range. So it's a really good job for somebody.
Okay. $37 an hour. Yeah. Good living for.
Yeah. It's, you know, it changes. We try to stay competitive with, you know, the job markets around, and, you know, and, we probably will never be able to pay our nurses what they are worth and our CNAs what they are worth, but we try to stay competitive because it's important for us to stay, for them to stay here and, you know, do their practice here and invest in our community.
Okay. Let's bring Kelly on talking about nurses. Kelly, you are the manager of the clinic here in Petersburg. How, for starters, you know, just day-to-day, the day-to-day operations there at the clinic, how is it looking now with COVID? Does it seem back to normal, or are things different?
Yeah, I would kind of echo what Jennifer just said. We don't feel like we're out of the woods. COVID definitely impacts our day-to-day. We have the testing, you know, the amount of testing that we do varies from day to day. But even if we're lower on testing, we're also handling a lot of phone calls coming in, helping with letters, medical travel, you know, focused on people. And, you know, often when I'm, you know, you stand there for 5 or 10 minutes, it seems like multiple COVID situations come up and a variety of things. So it's definitely a lot of our day-to-day still. You know, we'd love to focus on some new service lines and continuing to enhance services. And along the way, we have been able to do some of that in tandem, but staff are stretched. I definitely a high stress level of just kind of handling COVID on a day-to-day basis, the constant changing guidelines, which, you know, can be hard for the public as well, but hard for us too, as we're always just trying to, you know, stay abreast of that, make sure we're giving great, good information. And so that definitely can be challenging. And I definitely feel the staff, you know, staffing and, you know, workforce development is really where I want our focus on right now. And, you know, really supporting folks where they are and helping them grow where they want to go and hoping to onboard some new people that want to join our team.
Okay. Well, to help your team out there, like right now for the public's information, you mentioned the changing recommendations. For people listening, what is the testing recommendation now? Are, say, for example, if somebody has symptoms and they have those home test kits, should they just rely on those, or if they have symptoms, should they come into the clinic for a PCR test, for example?
That's a great question. We are always examining that. A lot of times it's on a case-by-case situation, so we still encourage people to call and ask. But we, you know, the home kits are out there. We have PCR available, but our supplies are lower, so it does impact things. So it kind of depends on the situation, but we have less rapid tests for the PCRs, but we can still do send-out tests, PCR tests, and the turnaround time varies. But we do encourage people to be doing home antigen testing as well. And I don't know if Jennifer or Phil have anything else they want to add to that as well.
I think that the antigen test at home, if you're symptomatic and you show positive on your at-home test, you can be pretty sure that that's positive. We ask that people call the hospital just to, you know, report that. There are some circumstances that, like an employer may require proof or things that you would need to confirm it. But generally, like that's a positive test.
What if you have symptoms and you're at home says negative.
That's less reassuring, and it's not as good of a test that way. So if it's a positive, it's very, very unlikely to be a false positive, but it does have a higher false negative rate. So if you are sick and you're testing negative, that's when you should for sure, you know, call and maybe talk about getting a different type of test.
Okay. So are you seeing, you know, all the information, the way information is shared now because of these at-home tests, that's all changed. So the dashboard isn't showing the, you know, what everybody's been trained to look at the past couple of years. It isn't showing the right, you know, what's reality of the cases in Petersburg because these people are testing at home. Same with this, similar with the school district. You know, they're not doing contact tracing anymore. So all of that has changed. But as a nurse, as nurses Kelly and Jennifer, I mean, are you seeing people still with COVID in Petersburg?
We're definitely seeing people with COVID in Petersburg recently. We are on my side, on the hospital side, we still are doing some monoclonal antibody treatments. And have had in the last week or so, you know, several inpatients that have had COVID. So we're definitely seeing it in the community, but we certainly aren't seeing the high number of new cases pop up like we used to. So we don't really know what the level of transmission is in the community. So we don't have any better information than you do. So if people test through us, we know. Or if they call in and report that they are positive, then we know. But other than that, we just don't.
Okay. Yeah, it's really kind of difficult because you hear CDC, but they're giving advice and recommendations for the whole country, which Alaska is certainly behind the curve and for most of the pandemic. And Peter's being isolated on an island, I think, is generally behind the curve. So I was kind of wondering about those numbers. I know the last time I actually saw you was during the Delta surge, and the hospital was doing multiple treatments a day.
Yeah.
You were slammed, it seemed like, back then. That was quite a while ago. But so you're still doing treatments at the hospital, but not as intense as...
No, I mean, in the last few weeks, we've had a pretty... quite a few that actually we've given in a short period of time, and now it's kind of spaced out again. So there's definitely, like, you get one person that gets sick and they share it, and so the people they share it with may all come in, and then and then you won't see it for a little while, and then somebody else will get it and share it. So
in that treatment that you're talking about, has that changed? Is it still IV monoclonal treatment where they have a very specialized room, specialized environment with the air venting and...
It's the same type of treatment. It's the... They're now using a different drug that is more effective against the Omicron variant. But they are coming out with oral treatments too. So... I know Rexall has a supply of at least one of the oral COVID treatments. And then they also have available, I think it's called EbuShield, and it's a kind of a prophylactic or a, to try to, it's for people who are immunocompromised, who have had all their boosters or maybe couldn't get their boosters or their shots, and to protect them from getting it in the first place. So there's a lot more treatment coming out, which I think is really, all those tools that we have can start working on treating it at home instead of in the hospital. So, we're hopeful that that will continue to evolve and be able to, have the treatment at home.
Kelly, I wanted to ask you about just working at the clinic and managing the clinic. What would you tell listeners are some of the positives of working at the clinic with your team?
Yeah, like Jennifer mentioned earlier, it's just really great to be working with a group of people that are really, involved in their community, want to do what's best for their community, really care about everybody that comes in there, working hard during a really challenging time frame. And like we mentioned, some of the ups and downs and the waves of COVID brings a lot of stress to the environment. But I just see every day people step up and do what needs to be done. And it's really inspiring. And so just kind of we continue to look forward to the future and hope to keep enhancing services and, focused on making the environment a positive one for employees and looking for people, too. We have open positions, so... We have some in the front and some in the back, and we're looking forward to, we should have some more information on it in the near future, but we're looking into a program that provides some grant funding for helping people become a certified medical assistant. You'd have to be employed with PMC to kind of be in that program, but we'd love to get more people on board for that.
Okay, and what's the difference between certified medical CMA and CNA?
Yeah, so this so the CNA is a certified nursing assistant, and it's a state or it's a federally recognized certification. And the CNAs work basically with the nurses under a nursing delegation, and their scope is a little more limited than the CMAs, who are certified medical assistants who work under the doctor's license. So the doctor permits the CMA to do what they feel like they can safely and are adequately trained to do. Some of those things are skills that would be out of the scope of practice of a CNA.
Okay, so there's all of that available at PMC, CNA, CMA, and then on to nursing if you want. Okay, great. Well, Kelly, is there anything you want the public to know about the way the clinic's running right now? Is there anything they could do to make it smooth for you? I know that you've been working with a new computer system, and there's mm-hmm. been, we've been running a PSA here at KFSK about reminders to patients.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, there should be automated reminders going out. So you might be getting phone calls or text messages reminding you of your appointments. It should be fully functioning now. And so we'd love to know if you're running into issues or if you're hearing something that doesn't quite make sense. Because it's a little different. But we have the new system, you know, should provide some efficiencies down the line. But with everything new, there's still some learning curves. And so sometimes things don't go quite how we think they're going to. So we always need to know if, you know, something didn't work right. But overall, we're optimistic about where we'll be in the next, you know, 3 months as we just get more experience under our belt for everyone.
Okay. So you'd like public feedback on the systems, the calling in, and the reminders for appointments and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And and then I think just the other thing is sometimes I know with just staffing and phone calls, we always encourage people to leave a message if they don't reach someone. It is always our goal to answer the phone when someone calls, but leave a message if we don't. We'll have someone call you back as soon as we can, because at times, just like everyone, they're staffing and sometimes they're working with another customer or on the phone with someone else. So just encouraging people to do that as well.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly. Do you have anything mm-hmm. else to add before we go, Jennifer?
I don't think so.
Kelly, did you want to say something?
That's all for me. Thank you.
Okay. Jennifer?
I don't think so. I appreciate the opportunity to talk today. And again, I just can't say enough how grateful I am to work with such an incredible group of people, both in my department and then the hospital throughout, Kelly's group, the lab group, therapies, dietary, the EVS and plant, just everybody at the hospital. They do an incredible job, and I'm always reminded of how dedicated they are to the community, each other, and especially the patients and residents. So we're just so lucky.
And Phil, do you have anything to add before we go?
No, I'll echo what Jennifer says. I mean, it's all of that and more. I mean, it's it's a pleasure to work with the staffing, and it inspires me to do my best and to work hard for the staffing and for the community and for such a great good patient, you know, great patient care that occurs here. So, thank you.
All right. Well, this does wrap up PMC Live, our March edition. Thanks to all my guests. If you missed some of the show, we will be posting the whole thing on our website later on at kfsk.org. PMC Live airs the first Thursday of every month.